Happy evening, everyone. It's Pam Stack from Authors on the Air. I'm back with my second hour of fantastic chats with authors. I hope that you're listening in. I'm going to be speaking to writer Ed Cook, who lives in Colorado, but he has such an interesting life that it translates so well into his books, so I can't wait for you to hear his story. Don't go away. We'll be right back. For being with me again tonight. This is Pam, and you're listening to Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. My guest now is E.A. Cook. That is his writer's title. He has a very, very interesting background. He has a life that kind of rivals the characters that he writes about. He has spent a good part of his young life traveling through North America. He's covered 43 states and trips over the borders of Mexico and Canada. He traveled by boxcar and hitchhike and as a carny, traveling with 8 different shows over 12 seasons. I can't wait to hear about that. He worked as a hot dog vendor, a face painter, and then he was an account executive for print advertising and owned a private investigations company. He presently drives a taxi at night and writes during the day. I am very happy to welcome to Authors on the Air, Ed Cook. Ed, welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm so glad that we're finally chatting. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
We've had a chance to talk occasionally when you've called in, when there are other authors on whom you like, and I know you did some Flash Fiction Throwdown on Noir on the Radio, but I'm so fascinated by your history, your personal history, and how it kind of it could be a story unto itself. Will you elaborate a little bit more on your wanderlust and how you became a writer, please?
Huh. Yeah. My. So I did a brief stint in the Army, and when I left the Army, I had nothing waiting for me, and I immediately ended up living on the street in Minneapolis. That was the beginning of it, and I was 18 years old.
Oh,
and
wow.
that began a lot of bad decisions, you know. I lived on the streets.
Well,
I did a lot of drugs. I did what I had to survive. And I was always fascinated with other places. I've always wanted to know what's on the other side of the hill. And so I knew that I was going to go to New Orleans and New York and Chicago and L.A. and Seattle and Miami and all those places because I'd heard of them. I'd read about them, and they existed, and I'm going. I had a bucket list, I guess.
Wow. It never would have occurred to me at 18 years old to have a bucket list to go to all those places, although I somehow knew I wanted to travel, but probably not in the same way you did. When you were that age, that young, so long ago, doesn't it? Were you a reader at that time? Did you read books? Had they come into your life at that point?
Yeah, I'm from a real small town in northern Minnesota, and our library is small. And I read everything I cared to read in that library started when I was about 11 or 12. And it really sent me off to reading, and I found out that I could write in high school when it came time in English classes to write essays and themes, and had been told by a couple teachers that my writing was really good. And then I did nothing with it until almost 10 years ago.
Wow.
I was too busy.
So
I was doing
started,
other things.
You were growing up, right? You were growing up and trying all these different things. How is it that you ended up going to 43 states? And was it intentional?
It was my intent in my lifetime to see every place I'd heard about in North America, anyway. And in the process of going to one destination, I had to go through others. So it was all, if I wanted to go from Minneapolis to Seattle, then I was going to find out what Missoula, Montana was like in Spokane, Washington, you know.
Did you spend time in each of those states, or did you kind of rush through to your destination?
Depended on what I was doing with my life. At one point, I was just total transient, moving wherever I decided to. And and sometimes I worked carnivals for years off and on, and it had everything to do with where they were going.
Interesting.
My life was sort of planned out for me from April to October.
Interesting.
If I decided to stay on the show. It's the kind of business that if you get bored, you walk away.
It's just fascinating to me that you did that. And I think that's wonderful. I don't know. Obviously, you had stuff to do in your life, and that's cool, and I'm glad for you. But it just sounds like it was so much fun as a youngster. I mean, I wouldn't recommend it to anybody right now, you know, as we're older. But it certainly gave you a lot of, real-life experience to tell stories, didn't it?
It did. There was plenty of dark times, and highlighted by great times. But it was definitely, I was living. I was constantly living, you know. I think nothing ever, the alternatives never appealed to me. I didn't have any desire to go to college or learn how to weld or start a business. Not at that age. I just wanted, nothing else seemed like a good plan except to stay in motion.
Interesting. What was the high for you? What was the best?
As far as the traveling aspect?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If I hadn't, I wouldn't have found where I live today. I live in northern Colorado, and I found Colorado, and I've been to Denver many times. I lived there for 2 or 3 years back in the 80s, and it was sort of a magnetic spot in the country. I found myself here quite a bit, and I landed here 18 years ago, and I haven't left. And so if I hadn't lived the life I lived, I wouldn't have found the spot.
You might still be traveling.
I might still be traveling.
So, but you did some pretty conservative, straight-laced jobs. I mean, you were an account executive for print advertising. That's a pretty straight-laced, you know, suit and tie type of a job, isn't it?
It did.
I had a Brooks Brothers suit and an expensive haircut, and I talked to the people that managed the advertising money for, you know, various companies. I couldn't even begin to tell you how I got that job, honestly.
But did you enjoy it, at least for a period of time? Because obviously you didn't stay with it, but, you know, but it was something so different.
Yeah, it was a free newspaper that was distributed around Minneapolis that it made its money on its advertising.
Mm-hmm.
You see them in most central business districts and major cities. There'll be a free paper on a rack that covers, you know, social stuff and entertainment.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. And so that was that. It was that kind of a paper. And so it was, I got to go to the coolest places that carried copies of that paper, music venues and it had enough to keep it interesting for me. And I find myself that I excel when I'm dealing with people rather than sitting in a corner of a factory making parts.
But how interesting, because you were such a loner for a while, traveling around, and you say it was your misspent youth, but it sounds like you got a lot of experiences out of it, some good, some not so good, but you learned a lot of stuff. But I'm also interested in the fact that you owned a private investigations company. How did you come upon doing that?
Well, to go back a little bit, I'm on my third marriage. And my first one was while I was in my 20s, and I had periods in my life where I was trying to get it together. And that's what got me into these cooler jobs. And part of that was working security for Embassy Suites hotels and some other office towers, which got me interested in private investigations. And it seemed like a natural progression that at some point I would be a PI, because I understood people and I understood all the logistics of it.
Interesting. I would imagine that this compilation of jobs and this kind of ragtag existence you had as a youngster, and then as you know, even your relationships and all, have all molded who you are as a writer. Is that true?
I would not disagree. I think so. I think, yes, absolutely.
It's very hard to say what your fiction is about. For me, as someone who reads so many books, I know that you like noir. I know you like pulp. But really, you're kind of a straight fiction writer. Your books are interesting. They're different. Your Robineau mystery books are not really traditional type mysteries. They're a little bit different than anything I've ever read. Tell me how you decided to write this character.
Yeah, it started with Calvin, a 17-year-old boy.
Right.
So this didn't happen to me, but the opening sequence in beginning with Spanish Moss is this kid hiking on a causeway, series of bridges that go over the bayou, and he gets picked up by a guy who tries to molest him, and he defends himself, and they go over a guardrail into the bayou. And I was hitchhiking. True story is, I was hitchhiking on that causeway at about 2 o'clock in the morning, and a car came at me into the shoulder of the road, like there was nowhere for me to go, and I jumped over the guardrail, and held on to it, and I was swinging over the body of 50 feet above the surface.
Oh, my God.
Until a car went by, and I had to swing myself back over with a 50-pound backpack. But that moment in my life seemed like a good place to start a book. And then I wrote the story based on that true event. Well, with that as a catalyst, yeah.
Let's talk about the Robineau clan. Will you tell listeners a little bit about this very interesting Cajun family?
Yeah. So that protagonist in Spanish Moss meets Estine Robineau, a man in his 50s, and a series of events has him introducing him to Jovetta Robineau, who is the matron of the family, of an indeterminate age, very, very, very ancient woman, with a second sight. It's not real prominent in the book, but it comes up that she has an intuition and that she understands that she can communicate telepathically with some people. And then there's Estine's daughter, Sophie, who is a medical examiner for the parish down there. And is also a third degree black belt martial arts. And an interesting woman in her own right. And they adopted
Calvin. How did you come
Calvin
up with this? I'm sorry. Let me back up just 1 second. How did you come to know this family? How did you come to create this family?
I don't know, honestly. I think, and it sounds like crap, but I mean it, is that I'm I don't plot out a story. I'm a seat of the pants writer, and they come to me and I write them down. And I think I've heard that said 5 different ways, but it's the truth. So the Robineau family was created organically.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've known Cajuns in my life, and I'm sorry.
Ah, okay. I want to know if you know the entire family, or are there more people we'll meet through your writing?
Yes, and
it will be.
We'll I have a book that I just finished, and I'm trying to be coy about how it'll all
okay.
roll out. But
well,
yeah,
then don't tell us. Let it be a surprise.
It'll be a great ride.
It sounds like it. So I find it very interesting the way you don't talk about yourself. So when I looked at your Amazon author page, which is something I do for everybody who is going to be a guest on my show. And actually, quite honestly, if they don't have an author page, it's very likely that they won't be a guest. So you wrote something very fascinating to me. Rather than talk about your writing, you said, I want to tell a story. I want the reader to be, whenever I tell a story, I want the reader to be swept away, intrigued, to feel the exhilaration that the protagonist does, to be able to smell and taste the darkness or feel the concrete in the back alleys or the wind blowing along forested trail. It is my hope that the reader had a good ride. Some folks miss the adventures in this short life, and others will die, rode hard, and put away wet with a smile on their face. I'm writing for both, and I hope your experience is like a 14-year-old boy seeing Jeremiah Johnson for the first time. It's a lovely thing to say to people who want to read your books. You are not a promoter at all of your own work, Ed. I know this because we've been friends for years now, and you rarely, I don't ever see you talking about your work. I kind of like that. It's fascinating to me. You let the work speak for itself. But in today's crazy social media obsessed marketing and branding world, you don't get seen by a lot of people. Does that bother you?
It surprises me that you say that, because to me, I feel like I am pimping my product way more often than I care to. And I when I look at my timeline on Facebook, it's me, me, fucking me, 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 and then a joke. And I actually get sick of myself. I really detest that whole end of the business. Dietrich Calteas wrote a great blog, and I think I linked it up on my Facebook page. And it's about basically what would make your life easier as a writer. And for me, I want to get paid to do it, and I need a personal assistant to do all this other crap because I hate it.
Well, I know a personal assistant, so I'll hook you up. And getting paid to do it is absolutely what you should be doing. I want to talk about, is it called Taconite or is it Taconite? I'm not sure how you intend that.
Yeah.
Taconite. Right?
Taconite. It's a low-grade iron ore.
Yeah, that's what I kind of thought, but I wanted to go ahead and talk to you about it. Will you talk about this book, please? It's a very interesting book. I particularly am fond of the cover photo. Let's talk about that one, okay?
I wrote that. I wrote Spanish Moss a long time ago, and I was encouraged to get it into print and get it up online. And while I was in that mode, in that zone, I thought, well, what am I going to write next? And I just reread every single book that Louis L'Amour ever wrote.
Wow.
I spent a year binging on Louis L'Amour because he was one of my first loves, you know. And I don't want to get off on a tangent, but he's so underrated. And I thought, well, I guess I'm going to write a Western. You know what I mean? It's been in my head for a year reading them. And I wanted to give a heads up to Northern Minnesota, where I was raised, because it's fascinating wilderness, and the people up there are genuine, salt of the earth, and they will tell you if you have a booger.
Interesting.
And I wanted to kind of, and it's a sort of a forgotten region, and underplayed in historical movies and in books. You don't read fiction about northern Minnesota. And I like the time period. The mining started in 1893, and so that's where I brought my story to, with a Robineau.
Did you enjoy writing this book? Because this one is way past the time. I mean, this is a historical book. It's way different than what you've written already. What you had written. Did you enjoy writing this? And was it different than writing the other books because of the time period?
It was different. It was definitely a crime fiction Western. And ultimately, they all are, aren't they? The ones that are interesting are crime fiction stories based historically.
Yes.
And
yes.
I felt like I got that out of my system. I wondered if I was going to write another, and I thought, no, I wanted to write a Western, but I'm not sure I want to write Westerns. And then the next story I wrote was historical fiction, but it was a bit later. Rusk came out in 1917. And that, it was a lot more noir. So I sort of jumped tracks there.
Nothing wrong with that. Let's take a call.
Okay.
Let's see. Hi, area code 763. You're live on the air. Who's this?
Hi, Pam. It's Dean.
Hi, Dean. How are you tonight? Thanks
I'm
for
doing
calling.
Great.
You're on with Ed Cook.
Yeah, I have really been enjoying the interview, and I just wanted to say, Mr. Cook, that I am from Virginia.
Virginia, Minnesota.
I am, yes.
Oh, way up north there, you know.
Oh, yeah. And I just wanted to say that Louis D'Amour was the first book that I ever read, one of his books. So we have a lot in common.
In full disclosure, this is Dean Lappe. Dean is Dean Frank Lappe. He is a fantasy author. His books are some of the most unusual and fascinating books that I've ever read. While you're on, just give the name of your books, Dean, so that people know who you are, because, you know, I like to pimp all the authors I know. So would you share the names of your books, please?
Sure. It's a series called the Alice Newell Chronicles, and there are three books in this series, Black Numbers, Blood Numbers, and Broken Numbers.
Which you just finished the last one and released it not too long ago. So you've got to come back on the show, because I want to hear about that one.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
I tell you what, I'd love to gift you one of Ed's books. So if you would go to Amazon and pick one out and then send me a PM, I want to go ahead and send you a book by E.A. Cook, which is the author name that he goes under, E. period A. period Cook. And I'd like to send you a book. And conversely, Ed, I'd like to send you one. I'd like to gift you one of Dean's books, because I think that you'd be interested. Yeah. Yeah. So Dean is a terrific writer. And as I said, he writes a story that I've never, ever seen before. And it's in a community that's based on mathematics, numbers, right? Maybe not mathematics, but numbers. It's just a fascinating story. Great, great, great world building skills. You have a question for Ed you'd like to ask?
I do. I know you talked about the Iron Range, Northern Minnesota's impact of a lot of your writing. Do you still go back to that area and use that as inspiration for any new books?
I want to. I found myself up there quite a bit. My mother was dying of cancer, and I traveled back and forth from here, northern Colorado, like four times in 1 year. So I found myself on the range a lot, and got to go to my 30th high school reunion while I was up there.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Which I had no plans to do, but I was up there anyway, so I did it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting area, and I think for me it's impacted a lot of my writing.
So I have a question for you.
Sure.
Are you a Finlander?
I am.
Yeah, 112. I thought so.
Almost 100% on my dad's side.
So Pam Lappe is a Finnish name.
It is, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I will tell you that one of my best friends, her last name is Clint, K-L-I-I-N-T, and she is 100% from Finland. She's an artist. So,
oh, nice.
I recognize it. And in a former life, in a way former life, when I used to do geriatric rehab, I was a geriatric physical therapist, I used to go into a nursing home that was all Finnish. All the residents were from Finland.
Oh, wow.
And it was like walking into the land of the blonde. It was just amazing.
And it was very quiet, too, wasn't it?
Very quiet. Whispers, just the nicest, lovely people and all. But it was an Aryan's wet dream, I have to tell you, because it was so blonde and lovely people.
Those old people, they weave, ball caps out of birch bark strips.
I'm telling you, they were the whole community was amazing. There, it's a small community that's kind of in the Palm Beach County area, so of Southeast Florida, just to give you kind of an idea of where it is. But interesting. I did not know that you were Finnish, Dean, so that's something to... I'm going to keep in my back pocket for a conversation later. And I'm so glad you called. Send me a PM. Tell me which book you want. E.A. Cook. And you want to take a peek at Ed's website, it's eacookwrites.com. His blog is very, very interesting. He tells some true stories. He talks about some books that I think Further is the name of the next book that's coming out.
That's right.
Which is the new Robineau book.
And that
I know
one,
you
by
like
the way,
Joe Lansdale.
Further is a lot more down and dirty and gritty.
And it's a little bit more modern too, right?
Right. It's
so,
it's a follow up to Spanish Moss.
Right. So you also blog about a lot of different things, and it's an interesting read. I enjoy it very much. So I encourage everyone to go to eacookwrites.com and check out Ed's blog. Dean, thanks so much for being with me and Ed, and please pick out a book and let me know which one you want, okay?
Well, thank you very
thanks,
much,
Dean.
And it was a pleasure to meet you.
Good.
All right, talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
So let me just take a break here and remind everyone that this is Authors on the Air. This is a trademark copyrighted podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. I am speaking to writer E.A. Cook, who is Ed to me, or Eddie. You may call in anytime you like at 347-633-9609. Have you ever had an interest to write in a different genre, to try something a little bit different outside your comfort zone? Or do you still have more stories to tell?
I'm not sure. So Spanish Moss was contemporary crime fiction, and then Jack and I was a Western, and then Rusk was what it was. And
mm-hmm.
I've written a lot of short stories and flash fiction that were really hard-boiled crime. And I haven't
right.
actually written a hard-boiled crime novel. Further is a hard-boiled crime novel.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure that I want to go to any other genres. I'm not a sci-fi guy or a science fantasy guy. Literary stuff is not my bag.
I hear that. Interesting. So I want to ask you about two jobs that you had. One was as a hot dog vendor, and the other is a
hot
face
dog
painter in New Orleans. Yeah, you were
mm-hmm.
a hot dog vendor. So was that perchance in New York?
No,
or
it was
in
New Orleans, on Bourbon Street.
In New Orleans.
Okay. There,
and you were a face
painter
there.
There's these big fiberglass. Yeah, I was, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The hot dog carts
are
big fiberglass hot dogs on a steamer. They were shaped
huh.
like a big, it was Lucky Dogs. Hot dogs,
huh,
chili dogs,
that?
10 inches of fun on a bun, got the sweetest meat on Bourbon Street.
Oh my God. A huckster. And it's crazy in Mardi Gras now. So how were you doing? Were you a children's face painter or were you airbrushing? What were
no,
you doing?
I would say, so if you want to paint faces in Jackson Square or out in public, you have to get a license through the French Quarter Commission,
mm-hmm.
the Vaucouleurs Commission. And I didn't have the money to do that, so I talked to a bar manager and I painted in the corner of his bar. I put a sign out on the entrance that said "Faces Painted Here," a little cardboard sign. And I spent hours and hours in there. For the Mardi Gras is about a 2-week thing that ends on Fat Tuesday.
Right.
And
right.
I made a killing. I got, you know, I painted until I was too drunk to paint anymore. when my lines started traveling across their shoulder, like, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm done. Here's your money back.
It sounds
but
like
was,
Key West. Now, I've not been to Mardi Gras, but I have been to Fantasy Fest in Florida Keys several times, as a matter of fact. And in my younger days when I can handle the party that, you know, starts at midnight and goes till the next day, we would get our faces airbrushed. They'd paint them with airbrush. And I remember doing that every single year. And every single year, whoever the artist was would always paint me in kabuki. I have no idea why. It's just a weird thing. You know, I closed my eyes and it looked like I had them open. I had this really weird anime-looking spray paint, and it was different every time. And I would never say anything. It just turned out, I guess I have that kind of face. I don't know. I don't know why that happened. That's why I was interested when you said you were doing face painting. I wondered about it.
I've always been artistic. I've always been did a lot of drawing as a kid, and then I got into portrait art, and I've done a few pieces of some famous people. So I thought I could transition to face painting pretty naturally, and I did. I produced pretty good work, I thought.
Overall, when you look back, how do you sum it all up? I mean, the best is still yet to come, I always think. So what do you take from your past now into your present and your future?
I have two sons from two different mothers, and I love them dearly, my sons. And I was not a successful parent for my oldest son, but I have him in my life. And those are the jewels of my lifetime of the past 30 years. As far as my takeaways from life over the last long road. I was also a Christian missionary, and I went to Bible schooling and was involved with a number of ministries and did missionary work in Mexico. And that's a whole other chapter of life that's woven into crime and misery. And so it's a much bigger ball of wax than what I could begin to explain. But adventures, I think I've lived. I used to say this long ago when I was 30 that I've already lived more than most people in their 50s. And now I'm in my 50s.
I think you probably have. And now you're in your 50s, and you've lived more than most people who are no longer with us. You have certainly had an interesting life.
Lived is a relative term. And, you know, I've done a lot of things a lot of people have no desire to do.
Well, the interesting thing is you tried it all, and so I think that's great. I love that, and good on you. I wish you the most success in the world with Robin O and anything you endeavor. I hope one day you'll come back, and we'll have a good laugh about you pimping your books, that you think you pimp your books too much on social media, which I don't think you do. But I hope you'll come back again. And maybe one day somebody that, you know, you'll want to talk to, you will come back on the show and take the microphone and maybe be a guest host. Would that be okay?
That'd be great. And thank you
so much
for having me.
I would love to have that happen. I am thrilled that you were here, Ed. I wish you all the best. Please tell everyone where you pimp your books on the internet and where they can find you, please.
So if you just put EA Cook in a Google search, the first thing that'll pop up is my Amazon page, and I've also got a Goodreads page, and my website eacookwrites.com, and Facebook EA Cook. Yeah, I don't know.
And you're pretty good about
is.
Answering on Facebook too. You're pretty good about answering on there, and I think you're in Twitter too. Because I think I tweeted about your conversation with me tonight. I feel very lucky to have had this conversation with you. Let's do it again, okay?
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ed. Have a great night.
Thanks,
Ken. Good night. Sure thing. And that's our show for tonight. What an interesting two authors who couldn't be any more different. On Friday, my first interview is with Scarlett Cole, who writes romance. She will be talking from England. She's in England, but obviously I'm not. And the second one is Robert Tannenbaum, whose book Infamy is out now, and we're going to have a conversation on Friday night. Have a great night, everyone. Thank you for being with me, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.